Go Loud presents Murder Most Irish. Find it first on the Go Loud app and on all major podcast platforms.
You get your chair?
Yeah. Get out!
You found your Misfits t-shirt?
No, Graham bought me this in Florida.
Oh, you bought got a new one?
Yeah, because my other one's gone. It's in his house somewhere.
Yeah, like, because you love that t-shirt.
Fucking love it. And this one, it's fine, but it's not the same as the other one.
Yeah, it's not the same material, I'd say.
Well, the other one had a red font.
Yeah, it did, yeah.
And the other one was like much better quality, because the other one I spent like 50 quid on it or something. It's like a really, really, like, it was an official merch. This is official because, but it's like, you know, the cheap official merch from fucking Target.
Yeah.
I love that Misfits t-shirt. I don't know where it is.
You don't think you left it in anybody's house or anything? Were you anywhere that you were like a hotel or anything?
I don't know. It's not like me to leave anything anywhere.
No, I fucking hate losing shit that you really like.
Like that luminous green scarf I wore.
Yeah, whatever happened to that?
That thing went walking.
Oh, I have lost so much stuff.
Well, you have too many clothes.
And then every now and again, I'll be here. Like, Becky texted me yesterday, this morning, and she was like, "Hey, is this your necklace and your earphones?" And I was like, "Yeah. Yes, it is." I was like, "I'm doing to you what I do to Sarah on the regular."
Yeah, you leave stuff everywhere.
Yeah,
But I'm really, you know how I like, you know, these leggings I have on today, I've had them for 7 years. Yeah. I keep clothes.
You know where your shit is.
Yeah, and even like I took all my summer clothes. Like, I have people see me in the same summer dress every year for like 6, 7, 10 years.
Yeah.
Because I take my summer clothes and I put them away.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I can't find that t-shirt, but I fucking loved it. But knowing that dickhead of a husband of mine, he's put it somewhere.
It's hidden somewhere.
I bet you it's in one of Graham's drawers. Because it's a black.
Maybe. Could be, actually. You should do like a full clear out and fucking find it, because that bothered the shit out of me. Like, I have an X-Files t-shirt that I lost, but I found it. I eventually found it, but like, it took me pulling my entire wardrobe out to try and find this one.
I would love it, but Graham is really, because he's so much shit that he needs to throw out, and he's a little
hoarder.
So he won't let me go through his drawers.
He loves doing a bit of hoarding, Graham O'Leary.
For the podcast, I'm going to take a picture of Graham's bottom drawer. Bedroom, and I'm going to put it up. I'm going to send it to you to put up, because when I tell you, he is a secret little hoarder.
That's how we were cleaning out one of the drawers and we found like vitamins that were 10 years old or something.
Yeah, no, he has a problem. When we bought this house, he took a safe from his mom and dad's. Like, what? Like, he had a safe and he had condoms in the safe and they were there.
Stop.
They were there. Like, we were on the pill. Like, I was like,
better keep these safe. I never know when I'll be able to get him again. Like, what was he doing? Like, where was his mind? That is hilarious.
Hey. He had cigarettes in the safe too, and he doesn't smoke.
He had what? Cigarettes?
Yeah.
The mind of Graham Leddy should be studied at this fucking point, I swear to God.
And he does not smoke.
That's so strange, Sarah.
And when we went through all his books, he had like money hidden in all his books that he'd forgotten about.
This man, Scrooge McDuck over here.
Scrooge McDuck is not even like, he just keeps the most random, benign shit.
Yeah, that's like borderline hoarder.
But he gets it from his mum. The other thing he does that drives me bananas is, you know, he loves taking shit out of shit and putting it into a bigger box of shit.
Yeah, what's that about? That's full blown like autism, dude.
That's Bernadine. That's his mum. You go to Graham's mum's house. Like, the other day we were in Graham's mum's house and she took a bag of Cocoa Pops out of the box of Cocoa Pops
and put them where?
and then took out a massive sandwich bag and put the bag into a sandwich bag and threw the box out.
Why?
And we were like, why are you doing that? And she was like, oh, I hate the box.
Like, all right.
You know
the way people say, like, oh, this autism thing is a new thing.
Yeah, nope. No, it's not. And she has like a great big tin, and she puts, so like, she will open a packet of like bars, and then she will throw out the wrapper and put all of those bars in another box so that they all fit together in a box with other bars, but they say different bars on the front. Oh,
that would drive me insane. Would drive me insane, Sarah.
Yeah.
My ex-boyfriend, my most previous ex-boyfriend, he had an obsession with containers. So if he got like, because he used to eat a lot from what's that place called? He used to not, what you call it? The fucking Wagamamas. So when they deliver food, they have those like really, they're actually really good containers with like sturdy lids. But keeping one or two is fine. Sarah, when I tell you, he had hundreds of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I went to his house one time and I was like, I'm throwing all of these out. This is not healthy. Like, you do not need this. But his mum used to do it.
Yeah, so it's just a word.
He just started collecting them. He's like, oh, when I make food for people, I can put it in these containers. I said, who are you making food for? São Paulo. And you're in fucking Edinburgh. You know five people. Like, what are you talking about?
Like, yeah.
Put them in the bin. But, like, his mum would collect them as well. She would, like, collect them and put cake in them and things in them. So it was like that kind of hoarder thing where you don't want to throw things out.
You know, Graham's like that. So isn't he?
Are your ears sore, dude?
This ear is not sore. It's got like it's got a plug or something in it, and every time I like breathe in, it clicks.
Oh god.
But no, it's not sore. But you know, Graham and Lily fully have hoarder disease. Like Lily just be like, don't throw out that piece of plastic that I got from my
house. Oh no.
Because I might use it. Will you? I said you won't because it's in the bin.
Like, it's in the bin. It's now in the bin.
And I throw everything out. You know what
I know you do. You're the other side of it, though. You're just dumping shit constantly.
Yeah. I just throw it out the bin.
I think I have a mentality of keeping things. My mom keeps a lot of shit that she doesn't need.
Yeah. Sometimes I wish I had a little bit of that. I might need that because I do throw things away that then I'm like a month.
You're like,
month,
I could use like, that. Yeah.
I have to go and buy that thing that I threw.
Listen, none of us are perfect. We're all trying our best.
Yeah.
We are all trying our best.
I'm recording a very professional podcast in here.
Who's this? Who's it?
Come in and tell us your woes. Come on.
Who is it? Lily?
Yeah.
Hi, Lily Pops.
What's going on?
Oh,
you smell.
I'll be home soon and I'll come see you, okay?
Okay.
Okay, Pat.
It's Lily Giles.
Your mom's going to kill you.
What did you do?
What'd she say?
She said, this is Lily Giles. And then she said, just got to do one. Bye. Love you.
Hi, Lily.
Hi.
Bye. You okay?
Yeah, it's just like being a fucking... Do you know what? I just need to go away from these two people. That's actually what I need to do. I need to get on a plane and go away from these two people because even when I'm like, I'm taking time off, I'm exhausted, I'm burnt out, I still have to deal with this stupid
thing. Away from that, yeah.
They come in and they're like,
yesterday and a girl was talking, was on a podcast, and she was like, sometimes I think my life is really hard and I'm like, oh my god, my life is so hard, but I'm going through this thing, but there are people going through this thing and then they have children. Do you know what I mean? Like, it adds so much more to what's happening on in your life.
It's not even that I have a kid. I have a stupid husband and a kid.
Oh, no.
Like,
what did he do?
He's just an idiot. Like, even that bit there where it's like, I get stuck in between the two of them because two of them fight.
I know. Yeah, they're two alike. That's all it is.
Like, and she doesn't listen to him and he doesn't listen to her. And then I'm like, the other day I told him I was going to set this house on fire with both of them in.
I'm just telling Colin that Vince McMahon and his wife officially separated.
Yeah, because she had to, because now she's a fucking
she got named as so funny. I don't even, I'm just laughing, and I shouldn't be laughing because it's not funny, but it is funny, but it's not.
Okay.
Did you blow?
Yeah. Linda McMahon is the, what's she, the Secretary for Education?
Education.
Doctor of.
She has to separate her husband now because her husband is currently in about 6 different lawsuits, one of which now involves the sexual abuse of 12-year-old ring boys. So that's going on.
So you know, her husband, I made a TikTok yesterday and I was like, Linda McMahon's husband took a shit on a woman that he was forcefully trafficking to other men.
Yeah. So she's like, no, we're here. Hey, now we're separated.
Yeah, now.
I don't know that man. I'm sorry, I don't know that man. Yeah. And Matt Gaetz, they just rejected him while he stepped aside as Attorney General.
Oh, did he?
About an hour ago, yeah. So he's gone. Because obviously people were, all the shit that he was, well, the fact that he's a fucking pedophile came up. So he's gone. About an hour ago it was announced.
Okay.
So I don't know who he's going to put in now, but I'm pretty sure he's going to resurrect Joseph Goebbels at this point and put him there, because I don't know what else this man is going to do. Maybe Hulk Hogan will now be the Attorney General for the United States of America. And Colin will be delighted. I sent Colin a picture of me like Linda McMahon, and he was like, finally, an announcement I can get behind. Will be elated than any wrestling, because he calls Donald Trump he calls him WWE Hall of Famer Donald Trump. Sorry, we're not laughing at you, America, but like, I even think people who didn't vote for him are like, it's hysterical at this point. It's Dr. Oz, y'all are going to die, and I'm so sorry. I want you all to come to Ireland because he's going to kill all of you. There's a man with a worm in his brain. A literal worm is in a man's brain. And he is now appointed to the United States government by Donald Trump. And that worm is saying, kill them all, Bobby. Kill them all, Bobby. That's what that worm's saying. And he's like, I'm going to put strychnine in your food. I'm going to make it legal for strychnine to be in your food so we can cull the population. Like, I don't even know anymore what the fuck's going on in that country. Like, it's gone. It's just, I'm so sorry to everybody that is currently living through this. Apparently, there's shit tons of Americans buying property in Longford.
Yeah, apparently a lot of them are, like, leaving.
Yeah, it was on the radio, on my mum's local radio station the other day.
Oh, really?
Yeah, since he won, that apparently, like, shit tons of them were coming. Welcome to Longford, where it's no better.
That's not
FYI. If you want to go somewhere liberal, probably not here.
It's not the worst.
Just as an FYI.
Like, it's not Florida.
So I heard a bunch of 8-year-olds when I was going down to the shop the other day shouting the N-word. So.
Who?
Just saying it. Just saying it.
Like.
So, you know. But anyway, yeah, no, just. Hey, America, we're sorry. Also,
while we're talking about politics, I'm going to say it, and I don't care, and people can say whatever they want to say.
Oh, she's saying it.
Right? Here's the thing. Don't pick Jeremy Clarkson to be your spokesperson for your inheritance tax problems you're a farmer. This man started Clarkson's farm specifically to get around inheritance tax.
Right? To avoid paying, yeah.
Send it to a newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like, it's the end of farming and farming is dead. Now,
and then that journalist interviewed him and was like, yeah, but you bought a farm to avoid inheritance tax. He threw a strop and was like, the bloody BBC. So you told the BBC this.
Yes. He said to her, you people.
You people. Jeremy Clarkson, it is you people. You told a publication that you bought a farm so you didn't have to. Like, what are you...
And then also, don't vote for Brexit.
No.
And then not expect there to be some financial implications to it.
Yeah, yeah.
and then moan because the financial implications of Brexit falling apart so significantly that your country went into a recession before any other country and had an inflation spike that was so significant that now they have to recoup some of the money that they have lost in the exchequer. And now you're feeling the pain of what you voted for. Like, you voted for it. Shut up and put up. And also, it'll be like the top 8% of farmers, which are essentially businesses.
It's not James with three cows.
Honest to God. Road.
Also, this is FAFO. This is fuck around and find out. You bitches voted for Brexit because you thought you were going to wake up the next morning and there were going to be a bunch of brown people on boats being kicked out of your country.
Yeah.
That's what you thought was going to happen. And it didn't. What actually happened is it fucked the fishing industry. It fucked the farming industry. It fucked the food industry. It fucked the import and export industry. It fucked your country right up the arsehole. And it's your fault. You don't get to turn around and blame everybody for what you voted for. It's your fault you refused to look past the lies. It's your fault you refused to not look at anything except Good Morning Britain and the fucking Sunday Times. It's not Sunday Times, Sunday World. That's your fault. I'm so sick of this. Oh, but you know, a lot of people aren't that educated. Pick up a book. I don't have time. Learn to read. I don't have time for this. Like, I'm sick of that fucking argument. It's so redundant and boring. Girl, I didn't grow up with money. I didn't grow up with a lot of fucking avenues for education or anything else, but I decided to go, hey, maybe these crazy people are lying and maybe I should read it myself. Sorry, just the fuck off. Like, pick up a book. It's just such a scapegoat for people. Like, even with Trump winning, they're like, you know, a lot of people aren't educated. A lot of people are educated. A lot of people are racist. That's just a fact. A lot of people are racist and they would have rather voted to have a crazy he is insane. That man gave a man with a worm in his brain one of the most important jobs in the US government. There was a legitimate man with a worm in his brain, and he's like, hey, you wanna Linda McMahon.
There is, you know, that really funny advert with, is it the Sting? You know, the guy, the black and white wrestler?
Yeah, that Sting, yeah.
And it's like, I think it's for like, you know, the Make-A-Wish Foundation or something, or maybe it's a Pepsi ad. And he comes and he beats the shit out of that kid. You know that ad? People are like, Linda McMahon's education system under Trump. It's so funny.
I understand that, because I can sit here as a fucking white woman and say, pick up a book. But it does get to a point where you're like, pick up a book.
Yeah.
Not even a book, man. You don't even have to read a book. Just have a little Google. Couple of lines, couple of bullet points. Read them. Because what's happened here is you fucked everybody. Like, you fucked everybody. America, we're sorry. Like, I cannot begin.
What happened on Threads, by the way?
I put up the most innocuous thread. So I just went on Threads and I was like, hey, guys, just to let you know. And I was talking to the Americans that listen to our podcast. I was like, hey, lads, just to let you know, we're thinking of you. I'm sorry about everything that's happening. Just know that there's people in Ireland that actually support you and we understand this is terrible. So for some reason, this picked up traction. I don't know why. And at this time, it has like 30,000 whatever the fuck. And I'm just, I locked her account because I was like, I'm not dealing with this. So then the MAGAs found it.
And what happened?
They were like, why did you fucking kill yourself? Like, it was so bad. They were like, oh. Like, they were so mad at me. And I was like, and the funny thing about it is I didn't even put Trump in the thing. Trump's name was not mentioned in the sentence. Not once. I didn't mention Donald Trump's name once. So they just found this. So I deleted all their comments and I locked our account because I was like, if I start, I will lose this account too.
Yeah,
Instagram will delete, because I was like, don't, Emma, because I was literally like, I'm going to lose my account if I start. So I just locked our account because I was like, I'm not dealing with this. These people are fucking crazy. And then one guy was at, like, whatever they say, added me and was like, the US government has given Ireland a loan of like whatever $1 million. Maybe focus on that first. And I was like, yeah, no, I'll get right on that. What do you want me to do? You want it back? Like, I don't know what am I meant to do with this. Like the amount of shit that they were saying to me, and I was like, what's happening? I just said, I hope everyone's okay. Like, they were so, I got called a potato farmer about 600 times. I was like, okay, cool. Like, I don't know what you want me to, like, they were so mad at me.
I wish you just had made a video being like, you know what, get right on now. Do you want a bank? I don't know what you want me to do.
Like a screenshot of my bank account, 23 cents. Here you go. Like, I don't know what you want me to do here. That's what he said to me. Yeah, he said, get on that. And I was like, okay, yeah, cool. Right on it, sir. But that's what happened on Threads. So if anybody's wondering why our Thread account is locked, that's why. Because I was like, I'm not dealing with this. Oh. Like, but then I felt people were messaging me being like, you know, we don't know what to do. I was like, I don't know what to do either. Like, I don't know how to help. Like, there's nothing I can do. Just get into grassroots organizations. Try and fight back as much as you can. But people are exhausted, Sarah. They're sick of this.
Oh, yeah. No, honestly.
Like, the momentum has gone out of it. Everybody is just... And then you can just see people online hysterically laughing because it's like, Dr. Oz is going to be in charge of our healthcare. Dr. Oz!
Dr. Oz, who for years... made me really think long and hard about my shits after that episode he did with Oprah.
He did an episode with Oprah, and there was a part in the episode where he said, if your poop hits the toilet and it makes noise, go to the doctor. 17-year-old hypochondriac Emma had several nerves. I would sit listening. Like, did that make a noise and hit the water? Yeah, of course it did, because it's an object far up going into the water. Clearly it made fucking noise. But that's what he said on that episode.
I will forget that episode. I mean, like...
And wasn't it millions of women were ringing their GPs and being like, oh my God, they got bowel cancer, like freaking out.
Like, there's
actually a great podcast called Behind the Bastards.
Okay. Oh, I know the podcast.
Yeah. And I think they do like a three-parter on Dr. Oz. It is fucking wild. That shit is crazy. Like, insane. Listen to it if you can. Because when I tell you that man was just making stuff up.
Making stuff up.
So just if you get a chance behind, actually, I don't know if you want to, because now he's your thing. So I don't, but you know, if you want to, but like they just removed Matt Gaetz as the potential attorney general. So I think people are being loud and they're like, oh, we can't put him in because he was trafficking 17-year-old girls and having sex with them.
And he was like showing the videos on the house floor.
Yep.
Like, so they hate him. He also, hey, who is doing that to his face?
Sarah, oh my God, it's so bad.
Hi.
It's so bad. He looks, he's becoming Jackie Stallone, like before our very eyes.
It's me, Jackie.
It's Jackie. But yeah, no, America, we're sorry. I don't even know how to help. I don't know what to say. I'm sorry. Like, it's a joke. It's not even a joke. What are we meant to do? Just come and live in my apartment. I have two bedrooms and a cat and a gay. So
you don't have two bedrooms. You have two bedrooms. One of them belongs to a gay.
Gays in one of the bedrooms. Don't know how you feel about the gays.
I'm down the stairs today to get his kitty litter. Well, I tell you what, he minced down those stairs. And Graham said to him, will it be warm in that coat? And he went, oh, don't I know, dear.
Was he wearing a big black fluffy coat?
Yeah.
He loves that coat. He gets super gay when he puts that on.
Yeah, no, he does. He gets
pompous on certain clothes and is immediately more of a homosexual than you could ever imagine.
True.
Yeah. But yeah, sorry, America.
Sorry, America.
Yeah, I don't know, man. What are you meant to?
I don't know. Just say sorry. It's not really your fault. It's not our fault. Actually, I'm not saying, my therapist has said sorry too much. I'm being to therapy this week and I'm going through it. So I'm not saying sorry anymore.
We're not saying like we didn't cause it. We didn't push him in there. Maybe we did. You don't know. This could be, it'll be a front for Donald Trump.
To knock it off.
So Trump 2024. Trump 2024. But anyway, it won't be Trump 2028. So that's at least something.
That's true.
Shall we do the case?
Yes.
Hey, Colin, tell us about the Patreon.
Sure thing, Lily Pops. Hey there, MMI fans. It's me, Colin, and do I have news for you. It's all going down over at www.patreon.com/murdermostirish, where we've totally revamped our Patreon offering for you mega fans. That's right. Now all of your favorite Patreon stuff can be found in one place as we bring you our MMI Super Show exclusively for Patreon, featuring all the usual banter and chat between Emma and Sarah Jane, plus me thrown into the bargain, along with Lily's Tales, Maximilian convenience bell bag and some surprises along the way. But that's not all. Every single week, due to popular demand, we will be bringing you a full-length story, whether it be Miscellaneous Most Irish for those cases that just don't fit on the main show, Murder Most International for those cases you guys have been crying out for, or even Music Most Awesome, where we talk about our favourite albums. But wait, there's even more! How about MMI Drive, the fan favourite podcast show where Emma and Sarah Jane drive around Dublin talking about all sorts of shite, plus our monthly Ask Me Arse segment where you get to pick the brains of the girls and maybe even ask me a question or two. So what are you waiting for? Come on over to www.patreon.com/murdermostirish and join in the fun for only €6 a month.
Give my mommy €6.
This week I am going to cover the case of the murder of a lady called Joyce Quinn. So just before we start, there is trigger warnings for mentions of sexual assault, rape, and incredible extreme violence towards somebody. So just obviously, if you're not in the mindset for those things right now, which a lot of people aren't, please don't listen because I don't want to upset anybody. I got my references from the Irish Independent, the Irish Examiner, the Irish Times, Maru in a Mask on TG Cahir, and the Sunday World. And actually, there is a lady, a female journalist by the name of Jennifer O'Connell, who wrote an amazing article for the Irish Times. And I actually DM'd her day before yesterday. And when was I writing this? Last week sometime on Instagram, just because I read the article she wrote and it made me cry. And I just wanted to thank her because it was wonderfully written. I'm going to link the article, but the article is called 19 Women Died Violent Deaths in Ireland in 1996. And Joyce Quinn was the first. So she spoke to Joyce's husband, Ray, and did an article on her, and it's wonderful. And I'll link it and please read it if you get a chance, because it's actually fantastic. So, okay. So on Saturday, the 23rd of July, 2022, Jennifer O'Connell, Brian Hutton, and Adesewe Awobajo, I apologize if I've pronounced your name incorrectly, published an article in the Irish Times titled Stolen Lives, 239 Violent Deaths of Women in Ireland from 1996 to Today. In 1996 alone, 19 women lost their lives to femicide, the youngest of whom being 12-year-old Alison White from Bundoran in County Donegal. Have you ever heard about that case, Sarah?
No.
So she was a 12-year-old girl. I think I was going to cover it, but then I just didn't want to. And a guy that lived in the area, they called him like Forrest Gump. He was kind of a little bit, you know, I don't know what the correct term is, maybe intellectually challenged, maybe. And he would always try and bring teenagers over to his house to like hang out with them. So people kind of just thought he was, you know, younger than he kind of was mentally. But he asked her to go for a walk with him, and she went for a walk with him, and he raped her and strangled her.
Jesus.
Yeah. So I didn't cover it, but she was the first little girl. She was the first one to die in 1996. That was January of 1996, the start of January. So Women's Aid, in complete shock and grief at the number of women who had lost their lives violently, began to compile a list of their names along with the manners of their death and criminal proceedings, if any, that would have taken place. The list became known as the femicide article. We realised that nobody was recording the names under a single umbrella of what we refer to as femicide, said Sarah Benson, who was the chief executive of Women's Aid. We decided that this was what we were going to do, and we've been doing it ever since. So that's directly from the Irish Times, that article that I just mentioned. Okay. So on the 23rd of January 1996, the first woman of 19 to be murdered at the hands of a man was a 44-year-old mother of three. The man who raped and stabbed the woman to death was known to her, a regular in the sweet shop she owned in Milltown, County Kildare, and her name was Joyce Quinn. On Tuesday, January 23rd, Ray Quinn sat in his home in Milltown, his eyes glued to the television as Rory Quinn, Ireland's Minister of Finance, announced Ireland's fiscal future for 1996 in the budget. Ray didn't realise the time until his stomach started to show the first pangs of hunger for the evening dinner. When he looked at the clock, he presumed it would be 7 p.m, 7:30 at the latest. When it read 8 p.m, a little nudge of worry hit Ray, but he pushed it down. His wife, Joyce, should be home by now. He turned to his children, David and Lisa, who were sitting in the living room finishing their homework. I said, "Where's your mum?" Ray told Jennifer O'Connell for the Irish Times. Ray said it had been a normal day. Joyce had told him that morning that she was exhausted and needed to go to bed early that night. Joyce owned and ran a shop in the village, which she and Ray had purchased in 1993. Joyce's oldest daughter, Nicole, worked in Dublin, and Joyce had dropped her to the train station that morning and then went to work. So at 4 p.m, Lisa, their daughter, took over for her mum in the shop for a little while Joyce popped home to put a roast on for the dinner. At 6 p.m, after finishing work, Ray drove to the shop to collect Lisa and bring her home. While parked outside, Joyce came out and gave Ray some newspapers. She gave him a kiss and she said, "I'll see you later." This will be the last time Ray would see his wife alive. So Ray left Nicole, Lisa and David in the house as he hopped into his car and drove towards Milltown. Maybe Joyce had got delayed in the shop. Maybe someone came in for a visit and she'd lost track of time. Maybe she had a puncture in her car. The road to the shop was a bad one, an old boreen with few lights and even more turns. Nicole had often stood on this road waiting for a lift from Ray and he had driven past her. It was very easy to miss someone. Nicole thought maybe her mother had a flat and was probably parked on the side of the road and Ray would more than likely drive past her. She told her brother David to follow Ray. There was more of a chance of his young eyes spotting their mother on the road. Ray was trying to stay calm, but panic began to rise. He had bought Joyce a mobile phone, which was kind of rare at that time. Like 1996, not everybody would have had a mobile phone.
No.
And then, so he decided, he's like, he had one too. So he rang and rang and rang, but there was no answer. He ran through a catalogue of potential reasons for Joyce's silence, trying to avoid the terrifying ones, and settled on maybe something had happened to her family in Dublin. Maybe she left in a hurry and simply forgot to call Ray. Ray arrived at the shop in Milltown. The lights were off and the doors were locked and Joyce wasn't there. He took out his mobile and called Joyce's mother and brother in Dublin. As his hands shook, he asked them if everything was okay, if Joyce was with them when they said no, Ray hung up and drove straight to the local Garda station. He actually said something in the T.G. Cahir documentary where he said, I'll tell you now, actually, sorry. So he told the Gardaí he believed his wife was missing. When they asked what time she usually arrived home at, he said 7:30. The Gardaí said maybe she had met with a friend for a drink. And it was only 5 to 9 and just to stop worrying. But Ray knew Joyce wouldn't do something like that without telling him first. He knew something was wrong. So in the documentary, Maroon a Mask, he talks about the fact that he was like, I knew something was wrong because I would do that. I would go for a drink and forget to tell her. He was like, but Joyce would never do that. So that's when he was like, something's wrong. So Ray then drove home because he was like in a panic. 15-year-old David was waiting for him, having driven the road to the shop and not spotting their mother. Ray asked David to come with him, saying that they were going out again to look for Joyce. Ray and David drove back to the shop once more, but everything looked normal and Joyce still wasn't there. Beside Joyce's shop, there was a graveyard, and in the January darkness, David began searching for his mother. As he called out her name, the panic was continuing to rise in Ray. Ray told David that they should look for Joyce's car, as he believed if they found the car, they would find Joyce. As the night got colder, the father and son walked to the local school. They decided to search for Joyce's car there. I told David to go down one side of the school and I go down the other and we'd meet at the bottom, Ray said. Moments later, as Ray shone his flashlight around the schoolyard, he heard a terrifying scream. It was David. David was screaming. As Ray ran towards him, he heard David call out, "It's Mum's car." He was distraught, and as he wailed, Ray shone the flashlight into the car. Joyce wasn't there. He couldn't understand David's reaction. But then he saw it, red and shining as the yellow light hit it. Blood. There was blood. So I'm just going to talk a little bit about Joyce. So Joyce Wickham, that was her maiden name. She was 14 years old when she met Ray Quinn at a party in Castleknock. Joyce noticed Ray before he noticed her, but when he did, he said he knew she was the love of his life.
Aww. Ray was,
yeah, it's really sweet. Ray was collecting his sister from school when she opened the passenger side door and asked if they could give her friend Joyce a lift home. When Joyce, shy and quiet, got into the car, he was immediately struck by how beautiful she was. Sarah, she was stunning.
Like, really?
They had a picture of her when she was 15. And she looked like, you know, those models in the 60s?
Mm.
Beautiful girl. Like, not that that is important, but I'm just saying she was very, very pretty. Joyce didn't speak to him on the journey home, but he said that each time he looked in the rearview mirror, she was staring back at him. So Ray and Joyce did not pursue each other, and it would only be when Joyce was 17 that they would meet again. Ray had joined the army, and at an army dance, he spotted Joyce across the room. She was dressed up, wearing makeup, and Ray was besotted. From that night, they were inseparable. Joyce would later tell Ray that the only reason she attended the dance that night was because she was hoping he'd be there.
Well, that's really sweet.
Yeah, they're so sweet. So 3 years later, in 1973, when Joyce was 21 and Ray was 23, the two married. Ray and Joyce had three children, Nicole, David and Lisa. As Ray was a soldier in the UN, they moved around. They spent time in Tel Aviv, Bethlehem and Damascus. Nicole, their daughter, remembered them travelling to Bethlehem on the first night that they arrived. The rain was pouring down and then the gunshots started and the bombing. So for anybody saying that this wasn't happening until last year, this is 1973 and they are bombing Bethlehem. So she remembered her mother being terrified and angry, asking Ray why he had brought them there, that they weren't safe. So the reason for her fear, obviously with the bombing and everything, was that Joyce's father had been a soldier too. And whilst in Syria, he had been shot and killed by a Syrian soldier. Ray said it was her fear that the army would take her husband and children from her too. So eventually the family moved to Damascus, and Nicole said they actually really enjoyed their time there. Two years later, the family finally returned to Kildare. Joyce was overjoyed. She loved being around people. She loved her community. In the summer, she would take in Spanish students as well as doing some part-time teaching. She would spend evenings helping neighbours clean the village, sow potatoes in their gardens and giving lifts home to anybody she met on the road. Joyce was a constant for her family and her small village. She was loved. People were drawn to her big smile and her warmth. The house was always full and there was always laughter. Joyce was also fiercely independent. She liked to be busy, to feel as if she was giving back, and she liked having her own money. There was a small shop in the village for sale, and when she went to Ray and told him that she wanted to buy it, Ray agreed and the two went to the bank for a loan. Joyce was a natural in the shop, and the business was a huge success. For 3.5 years, she greeted everyone with a smile and a kind word, along with raising three children as Ray worked in Dublin. She juggled everything and somehow managed to keep it together. Nicole said her mother was such a good person. Quote, she said, "People say you can't see love, but you can, and I could practically touch it. Mum glowed with it."
Oh, that's really sweet.
If you get a chance, do watch Maru in a Mask, anybody that's listening to this, because her family are so amazing, and her daughter breaks my heart. Like, she actually breaks my heart. It's so sad. And her husband is so unbelievably devastated to this day. Like, when he talks about her, it's just pure pain. Like, you know, cool. These people say, oh, as time passes, but you can just see it in his face. He's never going to recover from this. So that was just a little bit about Joyce. So at this point in the search, Ray and David are still at the school. They found the car. When Ray shone the flashlight in the car, they could see blood on the passenger seat and on the driver's seat. So Ray told David to go back to their car. His son was still distraught, but Ray knew they had to get to the Garda station as soon as possible. When Ray told the Gardaí what they had found, a search party was immediately started. Ray called their friends and family, along with Joyce's family in Dublin, and they began a late night search. Now, this is Ireland in January, where it's fucking miserable. It's freezing cold. It's dark at like 3 o'clock. It's just awful. And these people are out on this trying to find her. In the darkness, they walked with flashlights and sticks, beating down bushes and fields, calling out for Joyce. The next morning, as searches continued, word of Joyce's disappearance travelled to local villages and towns, with even more people gathering in the pouring rain to search. The small town of Milltown was overcome with confusion. As Garda cars drove through the roads and a helicopter flew overhead, they questioned how something like this could happen in such a small community. Nicole, David and Lisa were devastated, but Nicole was hopeful. She told Maru in her mask, "I still thought she was alive. I gave Ray a blanket and he just looked at me and I said, 'Take it. She'll be frozen. You know what she's like. I look back now and I think you eat it.'"
Aww.
So at 10:25 on Sunday, the 24th of January, a call came into Kildare Garda station. Two people searching close to the golf club had found a body, and it was a woman. The Gardaí called to the scene, where they found a woman with blonde hair laying on the grass. Her arms were above her head and she was naked from the waist down. A few metres up the road, a guard had found a pair of black leggings and a pair of shoes laying on the ground. They also found a pair of white underwear, which was torn. The woman on the ground was Joyce Quinn. The guardie contacted Ray. They told him they had found Joyce's body, and as his world fell apart, he began immediately advocating for Joyce. Less than 30 minutes after Joyce was found, Ray spoke to the press. With his voice breaking and almost gasping for air, he spoke directly to the Minister of Justice, Nora Owen. Please start moving on the prison system and try to do something credible and sensible. Our family are in terrible agony here. This is happening to too many families at this moment in the country. It seems we're losing the battle against crime. So that was from Jennifer O'Connell's article in the Irish Times. Ray had to break the horrific news to his three children. As he told them their mother was dead, they cried and screamed. The pain was unimaginable. Ray called Joyce's mother, and when she arrived at the home, she said, "No, Ray, not Joyce, not like this. Two violent deaths in the family. What did I do?" So as the Quinns reeled with grief, so did the surrounding community. Complete disbelief and pain led to fear that the perpetrator could strike again. They also believed the person who carried out this horrendous act could not be a local, that there was simply no way someone in their small town could ever kill someone as wonderful and kind as Joyce. This is a very small town mentality. Like, the danger is always outside. It's never within where you are. It's always somebody on the outside that's doing it.
That's just horseshit.
Yeah, it's not true. It's simply not true. But unfortunately, like, I know, you know, there's been break-ins around where we live and stuff, and people just, they just immediately blame people from Dublin.
You know, but what would tell you, you know, immediately right now, what would tell you that's wrong? Giselle Pellicott, is that lady's name?
Yep.
Whose husband, like, there is, what, over 70 men raped her, over 50 men are being, have been brought to trial.
Yep.
They're firemen, they're bus drivers, they're nurses, they're, some of them work in the judicial system, some of them are, like, these are all in your community. Like, the people who are raping and murdering women are just the people that live around you.
Yeah, and it is, it almost seems to be a sense of, like, safety in their heads, where they think, oh, but it's outside, it's not inside, it's outside. But it's like, it's not outside, it is literally in your community. Women, like, women are being abused in your community daily, and they're not being abused by some boogeyman from another county. They're being abused by the guy that you served in the shop yesterday. They're being abused by the guy that, like, fixed the tire on your car. That's who they're being abused by. So, but I, like, I think that these people, especially in this community, they were probably just thinking, well, there's no way. We know everybody, you know, and unfortunately, that's not a thing. And that's how a lot of these abusers get away with this stuff. It's like, oh, but I'm just Paddy from up the road.
Yeah.
Joyce's body was removed and taken for autopsy. A couple of days later, Ray and his children got Joyce's body back. The undertaker spoke to Ray and asked him to pick an outfit for Joyce to be buried in. This is horrendous, Sarah. Nicole, David and Lisa picked out their mother's favourite dress, a dress she always looked so beautiful and confident in. The undertaker pulled Ray aside and said, unfortunately, they couldn't use that dress. The children kept asking why, that this was the dress they wanted. But Ray knew why. Of course, the children started asking why. Ray told Maru in her mask, I knew it was because of the wounds on her body. So the dress.
How fancy was she?
Oh, Sarah. This is so violent, what he did to this woman. And it happened so quickly. And her body was so badly bruised and so badly damaged that the undertaker was like, we can't put that dress on her because people will see what happened to her. And you don't want your kids looking at that. So at the funeral home, Nicole, the Quinn's eldest daughter, spent some time with her mother. She did her makeup and her hair, and she sprayed her favorite perfume on her. She remembered watching people place the sign of the cross on Joyce's forehead and thinking they should stop as they were messing up her mum's makeup and hair. She was so beautiful, Nicole said. I just didn't want her going to heaven with her hair all messed up.
This is, like, so sad.
It's horrific. On Saturday, the 27th of January, Joyce Quinn's funeral took place. As a blizzard raged in Milltown, hundreds of mourners lined the streets and sat in St. Bridget's Church in County Kildare to celebrate her life and mourn her death. Snow fell as Ray and David carried the coffin with their other family members. David was completely overwhelmed with grief. Now, the awful thing is, Nicole speaks about this in the T.G. Garr documentary, where he was carrying the poor little, oh, Sarah, he's just devastated. He was carrying her coffin and, like, he was really upset. So obviously the photographers were like, right, he's really upset, get some pictures. And she was just like, I just didn't know what to do. She was like, I just had to take him by the hand and drag him inside the church. Like, horrific. His mum is dead in the most fucking violent way that you could ever imagine. And the poor child doesn't know what to do. He's 15.
Yeah.
So just stuff like that is really hard sometimes to contend with. The mass was concelebrated by Reverend Father Frank O'Shaughnessy, who had married Ray and Joyce in 1973. And there were 23 other priests there. So Reverend O'Shaughnessy told the mourners, I have officiated at some very sad funerals in my time, but this is the saddest of them all. The inane, cruel savagery of it. Mere words are meaningless and inadequate to express the dreadful heartbreak it has brought. The parish choir, including Lisa's classmates, sang hymns while Ray's fellow military colleagues gathered around him. President Mary Robinson also attended the funeral and had a personal private meeting with the family because she's a fucking legend. A legend, that woman.
Mm.
Following the mass, the congregation walked a mile in the freezing cold to St. Connolly's Cemetery just outside Kildare Town. There the Quinns said goodbye to the brightest light in their life. As their mother's coffin was lowered into the ground, Nicole placed a single white rose on top, a nod to her father, Ray, who each year for Joyce's birthday would buy her a bunch of white roses. I held the rose, Nicole said, and I thought if I don't throw it, then it won't happen. If I don't throw it, it's not the end. So as Joyce was laid to rest, the question of who murdered her hung heavy in the air. So this was, I don't know if you, we did the case, I don't know if you remember the case of Marilyn Rinn.
Yeah.
He was murdered, she was raped and murdered. So her body, she was murdered in December, but her body was only found at the start of January.
Okay.
So Marilyn Rinn's body was found and then Joyce Quinn's body was found. So Ireland was immediately like up in arms about this. Everybody was pissed off. Women were especially pissed off. So Joyce's murder almost brought about this this movement in the country, which unfortunately, sometimes awful, awful things happen for people to stand up. And it happens constantly. And it's nobody should ever be made a martyr because of it. But, you know, that's something that came about from Joyce's murder.
Mm-hmm.
So Gardaí were carrying out its extensive searches in the Milltown area, especially around the area of the school where Joyce's car was found and her shop. Several people came forward to tell the Gardaí that they had seen a man loitering outside the shop on the night Joyce disappeared between 6 and 7 p.m. Milltown was small and everyone knew everyone else. So the man standing outside Joyce's shop was identified almost immediately. And that's the thing about small towns. Is that if you see somebody and you're like, why is he standing outside at 6 o'clock in the evening? You're going to remember who it was.
So yeah.
There is that kind of thing. Like if I was in my house, if I was in this house that my mum's in right now, there's a little bench across the road from my mum's. It's built into the wall. And there was a man sitting there at 6 o'clock in the evening. I'd be like, what the fuck is he doing? You know, it's that kind of, you just wonder. So on the morning of January 30th at 7 a.m., Gardaí traveled to the home of a 23-year-old man. As he was handcuffed, Kenneth O'Reilly, a Milltown local, was charged with the murder of Joyce Quinn. News of the arrest spread quickly through Milltown, and the shock of someone local and someone well known to the town having been charged with the horrific murder of Joyce was almost palpable. To believe that someone would commit such an atrocity was walking amongst them was beyond incomprehensible. Kenneth O'Reilly lived in his parents' home with his brothers and worked in a local meat factory. He was known as a quiet, polite man, something Nicole, who had some interactions with him, had described him as. I would have chatted to him, Nicole said. I always thought he was a nice lad. My mum would have thought he was a nice lad too. Nothing about Kenneth stood out to anybody. He had been educated in the local primary and secondary schools and had played football for the local club. He was a regular in Joyce's shop, but only to buy cigarettes and sometimes sweets. The Gardaí carried out interviews with Kenneth. He spoke freely and openly, telling them that he had spent the previous night with his girlfriend and had gotten back to Milltown at around 5 p.m. He then went to Joyce's shop and asked her to change a £20 note for him, but he didn't buy anything. He said that he then left the shop and started walking. He passed the school and one of the two £10 notes Joyce had given him flew out of his hand and over the wall of the school. He started to search for the money and a caretaker of the school asked him what he was doing and when Kenneth told him, the caretaker started to help him. Unable to find the money, he said he decided to go and visit a friend. He said it was cold and he decided to come a lift. At 7 p.m., Joyce Quinn stopped and picked him up. He told Joyce that he was going to visit a friend in Kildare, and Joyce began the drive along the Curragh. They chatted, and as Joyce drove by a side road, Kenneth told her that his friend lived down that road. Joyce turned back and said she would drop him down. So he immediately told the Gardaí what he did. Like, he didn't try and hide anything.
Oh.
Immediately. And there, it turned violent so fucking quickly. So he said there and then he decided he was going to rob Joyce. So he was like, I'm going to take her money. So as he turned down, she turned down the road, he demanded the money off her. She told him no, not to be silly. And if he stopped this, she wouldn't tell anybody. Kenneth said Joyce then leaned in to take something out of the glove compartment and he grabbed it off her. And it was a knife. That's bullshit. He had the knife. That woman did not have a knife in her glove compartment.
Yeah.
He said he got angry, lost the plot, and stabbed Joyce into the ribcage. Kenneth then dragged Joyce into the passenger seat, sat in the driver's seat, and began to drive. He then dragged Joyce out of the car. He told the Gardaí he sexually assaulted her, then stabbed her in the neck and drove off.
Jesus Christ!
He left Joyce to bleed to death alone in the freezing cold on the ground in the Curragh. Kenneth then drove Joyce's car back to the school where he parked it, then called into the caretaker's home to tell him he had found the money he had lost and not to worry. So covering himself. He went home, showered, changed his clothes and called his girlfriend. They went to the Hangman pub where Kenneth bought his girlfriend drinks with money he had stolen from Joyce's handbag. After this, he got a taxi to Newbridge and went to a restaurant, all paid for by the woman he had raped and murdered. The next day, as Joyce's family dealt with the pain most people could not even begin to imagine, Kenneth Riley went to the local barber's. The conversation there would have been about the news of Joyce's murder, how awful it was, how there was no way someone in the town had carried this out, how devastated they were for the Quinns. Kenneth joined in on the conversation, then handed over Joyce Quinn's stolen money for his new haircut. In October 2007, 20 months after Joyce's murder, O'Reilly's trial began. The physical evidence against Kenneth was almost indisputable. Obviously, along with his... Sorry?
What year did you say?
This is 1997.
All right, you said 2007.
Oh, sorry, did I? Yeah. Sorry, 1997, not 2007. It wasn't that long. So they had physical evidence and he had given a confession as well. So Ray called the 20-month wait a form of psychological warfare. The courtroom wasn't any less traumatic as members of the Quinn family were in the same area as O'Reilly many times, from him sitting on a bench beside Ray to him walking past Nicole. So this is quite graphic. So if anybody doesn't want to hear about Joyce's rape, please don't listen to this part. Joyce had been raped and the semen found on her matched O'Reilly's DNA. There was also blood found in the shirt Joyce was wearing that matched his DNA. Joyce's mobile phone had been found in the toilets of a pub that O'Reilly had been seen in on the night Joyce disappeared. So remember, he went to the pub with his girlfriend?
Yeah.
He had stolen Joyce's phone. So he stole Joyce's phone to ring his girlfriend and then left the phone in the pub. So as the Quinns sat in court, they learned in blunt detail about the violence that had been inflicted upon Joyce. O'Reilly had stabbed Joyce in the chest, and when he raped her, it was impossible to determine if she was dying or already dead. And he then stabbed her in the neck again. The family learned that Joyce's underwear had been ripped off with such force that her bra split in the middle and the elastic around her leggings was torn off. These will be the only facts of the case read out, as at the last minute, Kenneth O'Reilly pled guilty to the murder of Joyce Quinn. He was sentenced to life imprisonment for her murder. However, no charges were brought forward for Joyce's rape. The Quinns are deeply distressed by this, as they believed the real motive behind Joyce's murder was that Kenneth wanted to sexually assault Joyce. The murder happened after he panicked, which I fully agree with.
Yeah.
That was the real motivation for this crime, Ray said. He is a sex offender and he was prepared to murder to conceal the sex crime. The reason the court gave for being unable to charge Kenneth with the rape of Joyce was because the prosecution could not prove if the act was in fact rape or necrophilia. Well, it's one of the two. Prosecute him.
Both are illegal.
What the fuck? O'Reilly was not charged with a sex crime, Ray told the Irish Times. It was flippantly explained to me before the trial, quote, we don't know if your wife was dead or alive at the time. It could be rape or necrophilia, so we're not proceeding with that.
What?
Imagine telling the husband of a woman this has happened to. We don't know if he raped her when she was alive or when she was a corpse. So we're just not going to do anything about that. Are you fucking kidding me?
Like,
what are you talking? So even when these women are dead, we can't get them, these men prosecuted for abusing their bodies.
That's insane.
So on the 8th of February, 1996, a month after Joyce's murder, 200 women took to the streets of Dublin, spurred on by this horrific case. The demonstration was to bring attention to the epidemic of gender-based violence and intimidation towards women. The women of Ireland were tired, scared and angry and demanded that something be done. The march was different. It wasn't only the feminists of Ireland who before this, prior to this, it very much would have been like feminist movements within the universities and stuff like that that would have carried these out.
Yeah.
But now it was mothers, aunts, sisters, grandmothers, any woman you could possibly think of. Their anger was righteous. Ray Quinn has kept his wife's name in the public eye. He has fought tirelessly to have Joyce's rape be recognised by the courts and for Kenneth O'Reilly to be charged as a sex offender. He also ran a public campaign that if and when O'Reilly is released, he will be banned from entering Milltown and not allowed to be in the vicinity of the family. Everyone is around here, he said. There's 9 grandchildren, the 3 kids and their spouses. So in 2021, Ray wrote to the Justice Minister, Charlie Flanagan, and this is what he wrote. He said, there is precedence for having a person banned from an area as part of their parole. Previously, the killer Sean Brennan was banned from entering the counties of Westmeath and Offaly on his release from jail following the sentence for killing Bernadette Sherry in 1997. I also consider O'Reilly to be dangerous. His crime was a sex crime, which he tried to cover up with murder. I'm annoyed that he wasn't tried for rape also, so I feel it is important that people know what he looks like. I'm certainly glad I know what he looks like now. Rape was his primary motive, yet when he gets out, there will be women who weren't even born at the time Joyce was killed and will have no idea of his sex crime. The prosecution told me they didn't know if Joyce was alive or dead when O'Reilly sexually attacked her. So they didn't proceed with a sex charge. I would like to see a move towards a minimum tariff like they have in the UK, where families know at sentencing what the minimum term will be before parole is considered. At least that way a family can be at ease knowing how long it will be before a future release is even discussed. And that absolutely should be something that's implemented in this country. 100%. Yeah. 100%. So on the 23rd of June, 2022, Ray and Nicole spoke to the parole board under the Parole Act of 2019. Their hope was that by relaying the murder of Joyce and how it had impacted their family, this would enable O'Reilly's parole, which was due, to be denied. So he was due for parole in 2022. The parole board gave us a very sympathetic hearing, Ray told Jennifer O'Connell. It was harrowing, in particular for Nicole, but she did her mum proud. In March of 2023, the Quinn family received some good news when Kenneth O'Reilly was not granted parole. Ray received a letter stating O'Reilly would not be paroled, and he said that the sense of relief will only last for 18 to 20 months. The horror does not go away. Joyce will be 70 if she was still alive, Ray told Jennifer O'Connell. I would have liked to look at her when she was 70, but I never got that chance. Ray says his joy now comes in the form of watching his grandchildren grow up, but his fight to keep Kenneth O'Reilly behind bars has not wavered in 28 years. Nicole said her family's life will not recover from the loss of her mother. She said, he basically killed all of us, not just me and the kids, that's her siblings, but my aunts and uncles, my grandma who went through hell once and had to go through it again. So Kenneth O'Reilly has never shown any remorse for the rape and murder of Joyce Quinn. And that is the case of the murder and rape, regardless of whether it happened when she was alive or dead, of Joyce Quinn. And I just would ask everybody just to watch the Maroon or Mask documentary on T.G. Carr because it's very well done. And they're just an incredibly strong family. I know I say that every time, but like, I don't know what you're meant to do with this.
No, he does seem incredibly strong and resilient.
Yeah. And like the fact that for I under, like, okay, the courts work in a certain way. I understand that. I get that. But to say to a man whose wife was raped, we don't know if she was alive or dead. So therefore, womp womp. I don't give a fuck if she was alive or dead. Her body was raped. Her body was raped. He means
I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, like, because they were like, obviously the forensics couldn't confirm if she was dead or alive. And I'm like, but why does it matter? Both of those things are illegal.
Yeah,
if you rape a corpse, it's illegal. If you rape a live person, it's illegal. Like, imagine your kids having to learn, Sarah, like, what the fuck? Like, his kids had to hear that.
It's such an odd statement.
I don't understand. And it's almost like they were like, we did a case a while ago, and I'm sorry, I'm tired, I can't remember, but I think you did it. And in the case, it was, he had murdered someone, but he had done a number of other things. But because they were getting him on murder, they were like, we don't care about the other stuff.
Yeah, I remember,
You should care about that other stuff, because that other stuff is deeply important to family members. That other stuff is not you getting paid for being a solicitor. That's a person's life. That's their mum.
Yeah, but like, if you take all of that out of it, right? And I know it's really difficult. It also, when it comes to parole, it paints a very different narrative.
Absolutely. It's like, you are actually much more dangerous.
Hmm.
You murdered someone. That's incredibly dangerous. But your intent was to sexually assault this person. That was your fucking intent. And then for him, and like, obviously, I think there was a point where they tried to plead insanity, and then people were like, no, he's not insane. He's not insane because he took her handbag and went on a night out.
Yeah.
He's not insane. He's a murderer and a rapist.
Girlfriend.
Like, imagine that being like, you want to go on a night out? Like, what the fuck?
Like, imagine learning you were out with him.
Yeah. Like, I say the guilt, like, and it's not her fault, it's nothing to do with her. But I know for me, if that was me, my guilt would just be like,
yeah.
If someone was lying in the curb. Like, and the fact that her clothes were ripped off like that shows that was like, he wanted to rape her. He didn't care what was happening once he raped her. And then went back to that caretaker and was like, oh, he found that money to cover himself. He knew exactly what he was doing. And I cannot begin to imagine what it is like for Ray Quinn. As I said, if you watch the documentary, the man is, he's broken.
When you Google Joyce, by the way, it's the first link that comes up on Google.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in a documentary.
Like, it's desperately sad. Her daughter broke my heart. Everybody just broke, and her daughter looks so like her. I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. But, you know, I think when something like this happens, you move on with your life and you live your life. But there's always something that's not there. Like, there's always...
There was a thing, it was very recently, there was like a thing on CBS News. It's not like, it's not related to this, but it was for gun violence, and it was children victims of gun violence. And the guy that did it is like this guy that kind of does like happy-go-lucky reports on CBS. And with his own money and without telling CBS, he did this like secret like project where he went to parents of children of gun violence, and all he wanted to do was like photograph their bedroom.
Oh my God.
And a number of like parents were like, yeah, we want to be involved. And they then did this special on CBS. It was only this week. And it's heartbreaking because there's just a space in someone's house where someone isn't there anymore. And just this space where someone that you loved, like this woman was adored. Like, and also, like, if she did, whatever way he ended up getting into that car, by all accounts, it was to help him.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like, she said that's what she did. She gave people lifts.
And people do. Like, I've often, like, pulled over for someone I like that would know my mom, but no, you know what I mean, and be like, sure, this is raining, get in the car, or you know, that kind of way. Like, and when you're down in like the likes of Milltown and back Borean roads,
like here, like people just stop and give my mom lifts constantly,
you know. So there is that thing of like, of goodness, but it is that thing of, well, of like, the fact that you have to continue, like, he had to continue for his kids.
Yeah, he did.
But just that thing of, like, my life is never going to be the same. I never got to this person was taken from me in, like, the cruelest and most unfair and unkind way. She didn't deserve that, but also I didn't get to say goodbye to her. I didn't get to, like, be there in the worst moments of her life. Like, that's a level of trauma that I just don't know how people live with it.
Neither do I. Like, it's one thing losing somebody. It's one thing for you to get a phone call to say somebody you know passed away in their sleep last night. That's devastating enough. But you know that they were comfortable and warm in their bed. Nobody was harming them. They weren't in danger. It's another thing to have to tell three children your mum was found naked in the curragh after being raped and stabbed twice and left to die.
Yeah.
And then bring her body home. Like, it makes me feel physically sick to even consider that. Like, that's not even a thing that my brain can compute. And I just, that Jennifer O'Connell article is wonderful because you're just reading it and you can feel every emotion that man is feeling. Like, you can feel everything. And, like, the way he talks about her and the fact that they've been together since she was, like, they've known each other since she was 14 years old. You know? I don't know. I don't understand. Like, it's horrific. And there is an absolute epidemic in this country. And it's not just, you know, one or two women. It's 200 women since, 239 women since 2022. And that's 2 years after that, there's another, like, 15, 16 women added to that list. And we are a small country. We are not a big country. So I know to some people, they're like, in some people's brains, they're like, okay, it's a lot of people, but, you know, it's not a lot of people. It is a lot of, it's a lot of women. Being murdered by men. This is not, you can't say all men to me, because in this situation, it is all men.
Yeah.
200 and something odd women are dead because of men. And it is femicide. And you can't remove men from this equation because they are the reason it's happening. So serious conversations need to be had. Serious conversations need to be had if you have sons, if you have brothers, if you have friends who are men, if you are men that have friends that are men. Serious fucking conversations need to be had. Because people are losing people like this every day of the week, and it's horrific. And especially not even for in the north of Ireland. Oh my God. It is horrific. Yes. Horrific what is happening up there right now. So, yeah, I'm sorry for the downer, but obviously we're a downer podcast. But yeah, you know, like, I was apologizing and I'm like, this is what it is. You know what you signed up for. But yeah, I will say again, read that article by Jennifer O'Connell, because I DM'd her and she DM'd me back. She's so lovely. And it's wonderful.
Nice.
Yeah, she's a lovely. I just said thank you because I just, you know, sometimes you read these articles and they can be so cold.
Yeah.
There's that kind of, like, statistic, number, fact, maybe one little quote. But she really, you can tell she really cared and really wanted to help Ray in whatever way she could. So, yeah, just wanted to say thank you to Jennifer for that wonderful piece. And that's all I have. Do you have anything else, my love?
No, what prison is he in?
I actually don't know. Doesn't say.
Okay.
Didn't say what prison he's in. But what would that be like? I presume if it happened in Kildare. Don't know. What's there, is there a prison in Kildare?
In Ireland. Because it's so, like.
Could be anywhere.
But maximum security, which is generally Portlaoise or Mountjoy. Portlaoise.
Yeah. I'd say Portlaoise. Although I honestly don't know.
I would say by the sounds of it, if he's been up for parole, he's in, like, a fairly lax prison.
Yeah, it's probably one of those, like, open.
They don't, like, you don't go up for parole when you're in, like, the maximum security. You generally get moved on.
And the thing about it is, if he'd actually been convicted for rape, this would be a different conversation.
Like, well, convicted for rape, he'd be in probably Arbor Hill
or somewhere. Yeah.
But even in Arbor Hill, they've fairly, like, when you get to, like, being considered for parole, they do that thing where they start to reintroduce you, even though you even though you haven't gotten parole, and you end up like out in, like, the likes of the local Sullis doing classes and stuff like that, and getting the bus. Ireland's prison system, like, we have loads of judicial issues and we've loads of prison system issues. I wouldn't say our prison system is soft. Like, if you take, like, fucking Norway, for example, like,
Norway about rehabilitation.
Yeah, all about rehabilitation.
Yeah. But I'm sorry, you cannot rehabilitate this.
But that's
this, this is a violent sex offender. You can't just, oh, we. Do you want to read a book away this? I don't believe in it. I don't believe you can rehabilitate these men. I'm sorry. Like, if you actively go out of your way to rape someone, that doesn't disappear when you do one rape.
Mm.
That's not, you're not like one and done. Like, that's not how it fucking works. This is something wrong with you. There is something wrong with you that wants to physically assault a woman and just like debase her body. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm cruel. I don't really give a fuck. I'm going to be honest with you. I couldn't give a fuck about rapists. They can all burn. I'm sorry. I don't have patience to care about these people. I care about their victims. That's who I care about.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck what happens to them. I care about the women and the children and the young girls and the young boys that are being victimized and having their lives destroyed by these men. And then I'm meant to be caring about their fucking rehabilitation. Rehabilitate my arsehole. I don't give a fuck what happens to you. But die in a ditch. Like, I just don't have patience for this. I don't have sympathy. I don't have sympathy for rapists. And you can fucking quote me on that. I just don't.
We call this episode Rehabilitate My Arsehole.
Rehabilitate My Arsehole, this episode's been called. Because honestly, I don't have sympathy for it. I can't make myself have sympathy for it.
Here, listen.
Go on.
Completely unrelated to your rant. I agree with you. Do you remember the day you texted me and were like, do you wipe your arse standing up?
Yes.
And I said, no, but Graham and Lily do.
Yes.
I would like to end this week's episode with a potential poll. So I would like people to message in to let us know if they stand up or sit down when they wipe. Because I legitimately think the people who stand up to wipe are, there's something wrong with you and you should be studied.
Like, do you sit down or are you mentally ill? That's the conversation to be had.
And if you could message Emma your details.
Yes, please DM me on Instagram and let us know if you... Because, like, I'm sorry, but the thing about me is my thought process on it is I don't always have solid shits. So if I have a particularly messy shit, if I stood up, my arse cheeks would be covered in shit. Like, the inside of my arse cheeks would be covered in shit. What are you doing? Like, maybe these people are having, like, super solid ghost shits. That's not my life.
No, like, 100% Lily, like, Lily's is not, and Graham's is not. And even during the day, I said to Lily, why is there so much toilet paper in the toilet? And she was like, oh, when I was wiping, it just kept coming.
Yeah,
and
because you're like, rubbing the shit into your arse.
And I was like, okay. But she said to me that she can't do it any other way. And I just
sit down. Say goodbye to everybody. I'm going to let you go because I know you're tired. And, everybody, thank you for listening. We're back. How long this will last, who knows? But here's an episode for you.
Yeah, goodbye.
Enjoy. Forever. No, we'll be back. We'll be back. Don't worry. I'll do another case for next week and we'll be grand. We'll be back. But yeah, talk to you later. Say bye, Sarah Jean.
Bye, team Murder Most Irish.
Yay. And I'll give you a text tomorrow, all right?
All right, bye.
Bye, honey. Bye.
Close approximation to a HR violation when I'm wanking to work, wanking to work, why, 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 wanking to work.